It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to the Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405 on this bright, sunshiny day here in Laguna Beach. I think we're getting ready for rain this weekend, but it is sunshiny today. Well, we've been talking about cybersecurity. We've been talking about secure IDs. We've been talking about how to make your business more secure in this cyber world where it seems like everybody is trying to attack, trying to get in, trying to make their way into areas that you would rather not have them in. So we've been we're continuing our conversation with various security people in Southern California. And to that end, we're going to be talking today to the general manager of the Identitive Group, Hirsch Identitive. And this group here in Orange County provides secure identification solutions that combine the convenience of radio frequency identification. They do that along with the security of smart card technology, which enables people to easily and securely interact with and manage digital devices, systems, data, doorways, access to information, access to buildings, access to rooms. Now, the company's offerings range from innovative hardware and software products to complete systems, integration services. All of these are used to address a range of secure ID applications, including physical access, cybersecurity, credential issuance and management, mobile payment ID systems integration. Identitive sells its offerings to customers in government, enterprise, consumer, education, healthcare, and transportation sectors. This is a very powerful group that's here in Orange County. And we have with us today the general manager, Steve Healy, to talk a little bit more about what the company's doing, where it's going, and how they go to market. So, Steve, welcome to Pilgrim Talks.
Thanks, Will. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about Hirsch. It's history in the last year. It's now Hirsch Identitive. Tell us a little bit about what Hirsch does and how it got to be where it is.
Sure. First off, I'd like to just mention that Hirsch just celebrated last year 30 years in Southern California. So a big achievement for us, a milestone for us in the business. It's been all based around security, and primarily it started as physical security. And we've built it up over the past many years here from what was initially PIN pad entry, if you had a PIN number to be able to enter your PIN, get secure access through a door, to then manufacturing controllers that would then have the intelligence to understand which doors to unlock, who to let through, and that evolved into us providing software to make the programming of the controllers that much easier. And today it's really a business where we've moved to not only being a hardware provider, a manufacturer here in Southern California, but also a software and service provider, which is really where the business is trending more and more towards, is things such as, you know, software as a service and being able to provide a lot of flexibility for our customers in the security space.
So you're talking about moving from PIN pads and hardware to software. How long has that transition been in place?
The first probably, you know, 20 years, and we still, you know, are manufacturing the PIN pads today. I mean, Hirsch's technology and our IP was really founded around scrambling PIN numbers. So not just a straight PIN pad that you might see on an ATM where you would just enter your actual PIN in. In our particular case, to add an extra layer of security, we would scramble the digits so they're not in the same place all the time. We still utilize that technology today, and we combine it with other technologies to add additional layers of security. The PIN pad technology was developed in the 80s. We carried that through into the early 90s with the creation of our controllers in the late 80s into early 90s, and then added the software element going into the early to mid 90s, added the software element to be a way to allow our users and customers to more easily control and program the systems that we install, because they do go together as a system.
Who should be talking to you? I mean, I'm curious about businesses. What businesses should be thinking about security systems like this?
Well, you know, it's effectively all business, from, you know, small, medium business right up through enterprise class. I mean, what you're trying to do is control access of personnel into, you know, whether it's your building, certain areas within your building. You may want to be more protective of, say, your data centers or your IT areas. If you're a hospital, it maybe you want to be more particular about who you would allow into your pharmaceutical areas and the like. So it really runs the range of the different types of businesses that are out there. And then there are various layers or levels of security that you can add depending on what you're trying to do. So there's basic entry into, say, even a commercial office building where you'd show up in the morning, maybe present a credential that would unlock the door and just allow you access to the building. You know, once inside, there may be other areas where you want higher layers of security, which may require you to present a card plus maybe, say, a biometric such as your fingerprint or an eye scan to allow that additional layer of security to confirm that you are the person that is the name on the card.
So when you say you present a credential, what does that mean?
Well, credential can be an identification card. Okay. In some cases, it can be a fob, can be programmed where you would just present this in a radio frequency identification format. Most people are used to seeing, the cards, if you will, and sometimes they'll have their photo on it, company identification on it, and then the cards run a whole range of formats from what I'll call very simplistic. These are low frequency type cards, up to what we refer to today as smart cards or high frequency cards. So depending on what you're trying to do with the card, how you're trying to use it and deploy it, the majority of the market, in particular in commercial spaces, tends to use more cost-effective, low-frequency, but to some degree it can be less secure.
All right. So when you talk about higher levels of security, what can that card do?
Well, it can do a lot. I mean, you have if you are moving into the smart card arena, you're finding that the card will not only allow you physical access, say, through a door or an entryway. It could initially let you into the parking complex. It can then also, once you arrive at your office, you can then use that card to log on to your network. So, that is another use, very heavily use of the card, is logical access, not just physical access. At lunchtime, the cards can also be used for payment. So you could go down to the cafeteria, purchase your lunch. In some cases, you're starting to see expanded use into things like transportation and in other ways. So there's a lot of flexibility within the cards, and you're starting to see that people are opening up the use more. Traditionally, they're still, I don't want to say relatively new to the market, but their uses tend to be more physical, logical access. But things like payment and others are expanding the usage of the high frequency or smart cards.
So I presume that this card would be linked to a credit card account or to my bank account, something like that. So
I can make payment with it. It can be if that's how you decide to provision the card.
So there's a lot of options for somebody in how they would deal with their employees and security.
Absolutely. And depending on their role within the organization, the systems that we deploy are very much role based. So if you are the HR manager or the security department, whoever's having that responsibility, depending on the role the person has within an organization, you can set up where they have access to, at what times, what days, to make provisioning the cards, that much more easy to use, if you will, both for, physical access or even, as I mentioned, the logical access, when they can log onto network and so forth.
How did Hirsch come to be? Tell a little history about where does this 30 years come from?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to say I was here from the start, but I wasn't. You have a bit of the history with me. As I was mentioning the scrambling pin pad earlier on, that was really the founding of the company. The technology was initially used to maybe a secure way to access things like an ATM and so forth. What we found out was that in the consumer world or commercial world, ease of use is keeping things very simple. The scrambling pin pad at the time was actually introducing a higher secure element to use. So with the numbers being in a different location each time you go to use it, it basically adds that higher level of security. And when we introduced it to the marketplace, the interest that we found was primarily in the federal government space. The federal government, and particularly some of their Department of Justice areas and so forth, found that this item was something that would give them an extra layer of security for their personnel securing their facilities. So the introduction of the pin pad to use as a control element or reader at a door was very attractive to them. once we developed that technology in the pin pad, and it had some control functionality built into it as well, it was a natural progression to then get into the market or into the production of the actual controllers, the intelligence, if you will, of a system where decisions are made. So there'll be a list or a database of information, say, of names that reside in the controller, and the controller will decide, does this person have access to come through this door or not? Does not have access to come through this door. So that's really kind of the progression from the reader or the pin pad to the controller or the panel, and then the advent of the software was really just to allow ease of use. And today, the software adds elements to allow us to integrate to other systems. It can be integrations into video systems, into alarm systems, and the like.
Okay. Now, what does Hirsch do with cybersecurity? Do you have systems to help keep my network secure?
Well, I mean, you know, the cybersecurity is a very a broad spectrum of things you can do. There's different layers to it. Our role within the cybersecurity world would really be in the space of tying your presence to a policy of, you know, one is, are you an authorized person to be in a particular place at a particular time? Second would be, are you also then authorized to log on to our network? So if, you know, for example, if I never entered the building, if I didn't present my credential at the front door of the building, say someone held the door for me, and or I went through when someone was coming out. If I never entered the building per my credential, then I shouldn't be allowed access onto our network. So if I never presented my card at the front door and I was able to get in, I got to my office and I went to log in and use my credential also to log in through a reader or some other method, the network wouldn't allow me to log in because it doesn't think I'm actually in the building yet.
Likewise,
if I leave the building, if I badge out or I've logged off, then my access to the network would be only through VPN at that point in time, if you so desire. So that way you could only have VPN if you're out of the building, and you'd only have local access or within the building if you've actually entered it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, it's really tied to the person. The security that you're working on is how to secure spaces, networks, facilities from a person who's not supposed to be there.
Correct. And also, you know, even we all try to be diligent about, you know, being logged on and logged off the network. But, you know, the reality is sometimes people leave their desk, they go to other parts of the building. If you, you know, as you walk through a large facility to another area of the building, and you present a card or credential at a door and go through into a different area of the building, then, you know, you could set it up that it would log you off of, you know, where you were, maybe your office, but then give you access to maybe the conference room network now that you're in. So it does take care of some of the housekeeping issues related to network security as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about your customers. I can appreciate that government would have a significant interest in security. How did that change after 9/11 for you?
Well, I mean, there was a heightened level of security, you know, post 9/11. You know, the commercial space is still one that the understanding of security and what it is means different things to different people. The notion that just having a reader at a door and when you present a card, the door unlocks, and believing that is, you know, high security is not necessarily the case. It really depends on the type of system and, say, the encryption that you have between readers and controllers and where the software resides. But, you know, what we saw was more of an increase in planning with regards to what people wanted to. You know, the business actually after 9/11 was soft because it was more of, okay, now what do we do type of mode. Now some of those planning methods are starting to, over the past few years, pick up and see more momentum for both the commercial and even in the federal space and government space implementing the changes that they wanted to enact to have higher layers of security at different facilities.
Do you think that the rush for making all of our governmental facilities more secure, has that wave crested, or is it still building?
It's still building. You know, there's been a lot of change, and it's building and it's changing. Because, you know, the whole issue with security and with technology is that, you know, technology advances to a point where you think something's secure until someone hacks that technology, and you know, then it's no longer secure. So, you know, we do see it moving on a regular basis. The technology changes. We went from what I mentioned earlier, you'd have a what we would call a low-frequency card, which is widely available. But, you know, to a large degree, you can find ways to hack those cards and that information relatively easily if you want to. Moving to high-frequency buys you additional layers of security, adding multiple layers of authentication. So having readers that do not only a single technology like read a card, but then add an extra layer of maybe a PIN or a biometric, you know, along those lines to add additional layers of security. Because, you know, if you lose your card, anybody can have a card. So, you know, it's what you have is your card. You know, what you know could be a PIN number. And who you really are, you know, can be your biometric, whether it's, say, a fingerprint or an iris scan, vein recognition, anything along those lines.
Vein recognition?
Yes, yep.
Tell me about it. I mean, I was beginning to think this is like Mission Impossible, but vein recognition? Tell me about that.
It's just, you know, if you consider the veins in your hand, for example, they're unique. It's a unique pattern to every human that's out there. So there's way and algorithms with technology that's out there in the biometric fields that can read that. You store the original print, if you will, as the file attached back to a person. So that, you know, when that person gets that read again on that type of reader, if you will, then it can match it to, you know, the original enrollment of that person. And that information, actually, the biometric information that was originally recorded, can be stored on a chip in a high frequency or a smart card.
Oh, my goodness. So, it, I don't want to trivialize it, but it sounds to me like the security industry and the hackers play this very elaborate game of coming up with new security measures, and the hackers not trying, but eventually finding ways to get into it, and then it just seems to be an ongoing puzzle.
It is, and you know, there's also additional ways that, you know, you can try and work through this with things like certifications. So, you know, making sure that a credential that is presented, you can verify that was actually the original credential via a certificate that is on, say, a file or list. So that way you don't have people manufacturing cards that may be able to duplicate information, but then the card can't be certified through the system, if you will. But you are correct. I mean, it's a constant, call it a challenge, that the hacker community would, you know, want to look at technology, because that's what people are leaning towards doing as a, you know, as a technology. There's technology is developed, but then how do you break it and move on to the next thing? So, you know, it's constant technology shifting going on, and there's ongoing and development that's happening in our industry. And we are seeing that the technology is getting to a point where it is becoming more and more difficult, but it really relies back to the user of these security-type systems to really understand what they really need, what level of security they're trying to employ. And the more layers you have to it, you know, the harder it's going to be to get through it. You know, that's really what has to play out in these different applications that customers have. If you have a standard office building, not much to secure in there other than, you know, pens and papers and pencils and things like that, may not need an extremely high layer of security. If you have very critical data, very valuable assets, whatever it may be, then you're going to want to take a look at really the security layers and how detailed they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about how you got to Hirsch, because I think that's an interesting story.
Well, actually, I was I was working for a large manufacturer, a Fortune 100 company, and for quite a while, and it was a good experience for me. I had some opportunities to go out on my own after working in a large organization for a long period of time, and it was attractive to me to do that, and so I did. And one of my customers ended up being Hirsch, and they had asked me to evaluate some international business opportunities for them, to help them on a growth pattern. You know, they're very strong domestically within the U.S., and were looking for further growth areas, and they were looking for some evaluation overseas, which they brought me on to help them with and evaluate. So did that for a couple of years with Hirsch. Hirsch went through some privately held company for many, many years, basically 28 or so of the 30. 2009, they merged with a publicly traded company of similar size, you know, kind of brought them into that publicly traded world, and there was a lot of change and things that go along with that, you know, culturally and just, you know, compliance-wise and all the other things that go along with that. So I got a little bit more involved in working with them and trying to help them through some of those things because I had been in that world before. And then in 2010, this combined entity acquired an RFID-based organization and actually changed the name to Identiv Group at that point in time. So the corporation, top corporation, became Identiv in early 2010. With Hirsch as, you know, one of the main business units within there, and had known some of the folks within Identiv Group, and they were looking for, you know, some management to come in and help them really take a look at where they were going, how do we, you know, keep this on a growth path business, it's a solid business, and how do we maintain that and grow it, kind of take a look at where the technology is, where it needs to go, where's our customer base at from both a sales perspective, technology perspective. And then, you know, also, you know, how are our customer experiences playing out and trying to, there's always room for improvement. So, you know, how do we improve that to also tie back into keeping this a growth business?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you wind up being general manager.
Yes, I did.
You know, I'm curious about what would you say about the, what you did to change the organization, to improve the organization. Now, how long have you been the general manager?
Let's see, it's 18 months.
18 months. So over those 18 months,
the sales and marketing group. Yeah.
What have you done to change?
Well, I mean, you took a look at an organization that's you know, been in play for many, many years, and this structure kind of built over time, and it really had the look and feel of a structure that just kind of built off of what it originally was founded on. You know, from a, you know, couple or a few million dollar a year business to, you know, where it is today, the structure is kind of bolted onto. And so really what I tried to do was take a look at how can we best service the, you know, the customers we have. And our customers are both a channel that we sell product through, and then also, you know, the users of our product. And then we have, you know, a range of internal customers as well. The way the structure was set in place, it was, in particular, in the sales and marketing front, it was very heavily weighted towards you know, regional sales support and the like, where you had, you know, sales personnel that were asked to do many different things, which was manage the channel. We use dealers, so there are, you know, our channel is through a dealer network that handles the installation side of things and the sales of our products, and then try and get our product specified, try and get to the users, try and get to consultants, and then also, you know, once things are sold, you know, we have issues, and they would get involved in project management, post-sales activity, and there would be some misdirection towards moving on to the next sales opportunity and growth opportunity versus kind of living in that, the project that's already been sold. So what we tried to do was, or what we did actually, was we took a look at our structure the way it was, and how could we improve it such that we keep our sales focus, our sales personnel focused on current sale, closing the sale and moving on to the next. How do we keep our channel partners, our dealers, feeling like they're engaged and we're staying close to them and helping them? How do we continue to support, you know, or drive business to the dealers from the user side of things and from the from the actual market itself? And, you know, how do we support customers in a post-sale environment so that they feel that the whole experience in the purchase and installation of a Hirsch system is really something that's a benefit to them. So you know, we made some structural changes where the sales team was really in need of what we called sales engineers to help them with some of the more complicated technical aspects of the sale, but primarily in the post-sales activity, dealing with the dealer and the user in somewhat of a project management format. So we restructured to add sales engineers into the mix. We took some of our sales resources and we focused them on just dealer management, because that is a unique talent in itself, to be able to work with a channel partner or a company who is reselling the product, has to install the product, because there's different levels of issues that go along with that are different from manufacturing product to installing product. And then, you know, a portion of our sales team, we move to, you know, focus in markets, in particular, you know, our government markets, where we do very well, but we need to continue to support that. There's additional growth opportunities in that space. So really drive the business then from the user level as well. So really tried to take a look at covering those aspects of the sales channel, which was our primary change, you know, coming in when I came on board, was really that restructuring to be a bit more sales focused.
Oh, good. So I want to dig in a little bit deeper into how you go to market. So can you stick around to after the break we have here?
Absolutely.
I'll look forward to it. So let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Gary Harvey with Sandler Training. I'm here to discuss with you today rule number four. A decision not to make a decision is making a decision. Have you ever yourself, have you gone out shopping for something, you had a salesperson show you whatever it is you're looking for, you really have an interest to buy, but you're not really sure. Flip side, you may actually realize you really don't want to buy it, but you don't want to hurt their feelings. So you use the most proverbial words in sales that salespeople don't want to hear, but they're willing to accept, called the proverbial think it over. I'm a firm believer in all the salespeople that I have coached throughout my career, that really is a code for the word a slow no. I had a client recently that was proposing a fairly large project to a prospect. Prospect said, gee, it looked interesting. We have a lot of interest in what you're offering. And by the way, we really like you. So one of the things that made him feel like I've got it. So they said, let us get back to you the next week. But this looks really good, but we do need to think it over. We're a firm believer at Sandler Training that if it's going to be a think it over, 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be a no, but they don't want to tell you that. We're also firm believers that if it's going to be a no, we all know this intellectually, don't we? We want to know right up front. But emotionally, we don't want to hear those words. So plant your feet, stand your ground, and be willing to say to a potential client, with all due respect, Mr. and Mrs. Prospect, that decision not to make a decision really is making a decision. And it's a no in my world, and it's okay to tell me that.
So, welcome back. We have been speaking with the general manager of Hirsch Identiv, Steve Healy. Steve Healy has been the general manager there for 18 months and has been making some significant changes to the way they go to market. And I want to hear more about how they're going to market. So, Steve, tell us a little bit more about how do you go to market with various customers? Are there various niches? Do you have different salespeople for different customer sets? How do you organize?
We really do. I mean, the focus of our main avenue to sales, or our channel, or to the marketplace, is primarily through what we would call a dealer network. These are primarily independent companies, and because we sell a system and it's inclusive of hardware, software, we need the local support to handle installation and service to the customer as needed. So, you know, this dealer channel is extremely important to us, and we really need to make sure that we focus personnel to maintaining those relationships. You know, we call it sales here. They're part of our sales team. They're very much account managers. They really strive to build strong relationships with these dealers or channel partners that we have, because we don't do, on a majority of our business is not through, you know, a one-off project through a particular dealer or integrator, if you will. This is relationships that are built over many years. We're a product line that they sell, but they could also carry other lines. So we need to make sure that we, you know, win our fair share of their business that they're going out and pushing to the actual users. But we then also need to make sure that we are driving business from the user level, such that when users are contacting dealers for pricing quotes and the like, or specifications are coming out, that they have Hirsch in the spec. So, you know, we focus, you know, some personnel on really driving things from the user base. Presently, we have a separate team from our dealer account managers that is focused in really in the federal government vertical. And they work with agencies on different levels to bring the Hirsch solution to the table, so that when they go out to bid, or, you know, RFPs, you know, for proposals and the like, that the Hirsch product is really the one that they're looking for via the technical specifications that they're putting out. So, you know, we really try and work with the users to make sure we understand their problems They feel comfortable with the solution we bring to the table, so they ask for our product, if not by name, then by features or what we can provide. So we're trying to cover both ends of the dealer management and then also getting to the users to drive business back up to the dealers as well.
So you're primarily in a B2B business.
Yes.
What kind of lead generation do you do? Is that primarily through the through your distributor, your channel partners?
There is some through that. I mean, most of the lead generation that we handle through here, we get various leads through, you know, through web, through trade shows, through advertising and the like. We contact those leads, you know, from here directly first to really try and vet them before we would turn them over to a dealer. One thing we want to make sure of is the leads we do give our dealers are ones that are qualified. You know, when we sort through all the different leads we have, sometimes we find that it's maybe some people just fishing for information and the like. But when we turn a lead over to our dealer, we want to make sure it's qualified so that they see the value in it, that they appreciate that we're taking some time to really vet that lead, that we also take that time to make sure that we understand what the lead is actually looking for. So we have an idea of maybe the best dealer to put it through. We may have dealers that are strong in certain areas over others. So, you know, having that initial communication with the user or lead initially directly provides us that information. It's vetted before it's handed off to the dealer. And in some cases, we may even make two or three calls to the lead via the salesperson or, you know, the regional manager here to make sure before we hand it off, because we may have to hand it off to two or three dealers if it's a bid scenario or similar.
So do you track each of those leads after you hand it over to your dealers?
Yes. I mean, you know, we go through the same struggles as everyone else that would have a similar channel, is that we track the lead when it left here. Getting that feedback back is not always the easiest thing to do. So, you know, it's important that we keep everyone, the regional manager, in the loop for, you know, that, you know, that has the relationship with the dealer and trying to get feedback from that. You know, we have a database of information that we track the information on, and we keep those leads open and continually follow up on them until we can close them out.
Do you use CRM?
Yes.
Any particular one? Homegrown or Salesforce.com?
We're a Microsoft certified Gold partner, so, you know, we Good. Utilize you know, the Microsoft suite of products and Microsoft CRM.
Okay. Now, what do you do anything to generate leads? I mean, you mentioned they come to the web. Is your lead generation more of a, now this is simply descriptive, if it's not the value in it, but I mean, is it more passive if they happen to come, if they find us organically on the search, they come to the web, or are you active in trying to draw people in?
It's both. I mean, you know, the web is a place for leads, and, you know, we do generate a fair number that come, you know, from people inquiring or doing research on us. And those are very important ones to us because that demonstrates someone with an actual need if they're going out looking for it. But we're also active in the fact that we, you know, through our marketing group, we do, you know, a series of trade shows in different areas and different venues. Some are security-based trade shows, and some are vertical-based shows, and which we're really trying to capture applications that we feel that we're very strong in, or verticals that we've had success in and we have other references to. So, you know, it's the combination of the trade shows, the web. We also do marketing communications out to our user base. We utilize our CRM database to drill down to information. We contact existing customers for things like upgrades as we go through software upgrades, maybe service level agreements, depending if they're running servers with our product on it. And so we do try to be proactive in the lead generation as well. But, you know, we'll also take the passive leads that we get too.
Sure, sure. Now, have you begun to use marketing automation programs?
We use some, mostly on the email targeting side. So, you know, we're looking for specific customers we want to get messaging out to. To that end, we do. But I'm also a big believer is that we need to really understand our own marketing. We've recently made some changes within the marketing realm here where we're really trying to be more marketing communication focused. Our industry is a very broad one where, you know, we've got security, it goes in all different facets of companies across the board. But it's important for us to make sure that we communicate messaging out properly, both to our channel dealers, but our existing users, possible new users, consultants. You know, so we really have focused over the past year on improving our MarCom, you know, to all those channels.
Mm-hmm. So you have a group in marketing that works on generating the leads. I'm assuming that you have some people in inside sales who will qualify those leads, and then someone assigns them out to a dealer to sell. Is that right?
Yes.
Now, after the sale is done, and there's probably an installation team or some sort of onboarding team. After that, there's account management, and I know you use the word account managers, but there is that ongoing relationship with your customer base. Who does that in your company? Is it the salespeople themselves, the channel managers, or is it a different team?
You know, it actually, when you really boil it down, it's across the board within the organization, you know, and it's multiple departments. I mean, the primary would be, you know, probably the salesperson is still the primary. Then, you know, there are inside sales and customer service reps that we have here who also have that relationship with the customer. So, you know, the orders have come in, it's shipped, and, you know, where is it at, and all those pieces and elements to it. Or, you know, hey, I bought this from you last year, I need some additional. They may not need to go through the sales. They go right into customer service or inside sales.
Mm-hmm.
There's the technical support aspect of it. You know, we have a full tech support team here. So if they're experiencing an issue, they want to do an upgrade, but they have a question. You know, maybe they had a failure of a database and they have a problem, you know, and they need some help. So, you know, that whole relationship also resides within tech support. Quality, if there was a problem with a product that had to be returned, and, you know, getting the information behind why. And you know, again, we'll come back to a database of management for us is, you know, we utilize CRM to be able to allow, you know, the departments to communicate across from each other to see what kind of contact with the users has been taking place. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can point out a primary within the sales element, but with many of our customers, it runs across the board through different departments.
Mm-hmm. Now, I frequently remind myself that a company's best customers are the competition's best prospects, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, do you have a way, a system of staying in touch with your customers for whom it's working just fine, thank you very much, and I really don't need something new right now, so I'm not calling back. Do you have a system for staying in touch with the people on a regular basis who are your current customers? If they,
well,
you know, apart from the sales support, I mean, technical support.
Yeah, I you know, first off, we do a regular, you know, quarterly marketing communication out to, you know, our database of users. When people purchase our product, they register the software. So, you know, we have information, you know, that guides us back to the users. You know, we try and stay in touch with them for a variety of reasons, including things like, you know, just so you know, there's a new release update, or, you know, there's, you know, some new product information. Here's our next version of product on the software front. So these are the things that are in the upgrade that may be of interest to you. So, you know, we communicate out on a regular basis with our existing customer base that we've built, or that database that we've built off of, you know, registering these users. You know, the other thing I would add in there is that one of the things that I'm very excited and proud to be associated with Hirsch is that our reliability of our product is one of the things that we're known for in the industry. And, you know, the focus that we have on making sure we deliver something that's very high quality, very robust, you know, sometimes you can almost think it doesn't help you, because we have systems that have been installed and we've never heard from the customers again because they've never had to deal with any issues with the product again. You know, so there's a little bit of, you know, sometimes you can be disconnected from your customers with such, you know, strong quality and performance of the product. But that also is what, you know, we hear when we're at events and we see customers and they're like, you know, love your product, put it in, had it in for 20 years, never had an issue with it. You know, we do keep that communication open to our customers, and through, you know, forward or proactive marketing communications. And we, you know, we'll also mine our database to try and stay in touch with our customers, especially ones that may be running older versions of product or older versions of software, where they could really see an improvement to system performance by going through an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So what I'm hearing is you have the three parts that I tend to look at. You've got lead generation, you've got sales, and then you've got some account management that has to do with, especially around technical support and mining the database. In those areas, what areas over the next 12 months would you like to see improvement, if any?
Well, I'm a big fan of continuous improvement, so I never say we're at where we need to be. So, you know, what I would say, you know, I want to continue on, you know, making sure that on the sales front we really have an understanding of what our customers are needing, what the marketplace is asking for. So really making sure that the sales element is feeding back into the technology piece that's here, so that our technologists in our R&D group have a good understanding, and we do that through strong product management. We really haven't talked about that very much, but I'm also a big fan of product management as the link between, you know, the market needs and how we develop that technically. But, you know, the probably the biggest thing for me is what I call the customer experience. Very, very plain two words, but I believe we get a tremendous amount of new business because we have strong customer experience. And the more we improve that, the more business I see coming our way. Because, you know, customer experience is, again, throughout the organization. Somebody may buy something because, you know, maybe they perceive it to be the best value, lowest cost, whatever it may be. But if you purchase something and maybe you felt you paid a premium, but you, you know, maybe you have an issue with it and you call into tech support and you have a very strong technical support experience and it was a very positive experience, then, you know, to be honest, paying that little extra, that premium, doesn't seem so bad anymore. You know, Hirsch isn't going to be necessarily the lowest cost out there, but we can be the best value to our customer base for what they're trying to do and for the long term of use of the system. So, you know, I want to eliminate quality issues in the field because those are issues that customers have to deal with and it's more of frustration to them. You know, I want to make sure they have good technical support. I want to make sure that they have good customer service experience when they place their order. They get the information they need. They understand the delivery. We meet those delivery dates because ultimately all that just creates more business for us down the road, whether it's through existing user recommending to somebody else saying, hey, look, you know, I used Hirsch and I had great experience, never a problem, or it's an existing customer coming back because they've had such a strong experience.
So do you use any electronic tracking for your customer support like Zendesk or anything like that?
We're using CRM across the board. It's really the main database of information for us to draw from. You know, so it's really within that realm, and also it's the communication of the different departments as well. I mean, I'm a big fan of, you know, if there's an important enough issue, it's pick up the phone and call someone in the other department. Don't leave it just to email. You know, make it a little bit more personable, and you know, trying to get different departments to open up on the communication front is also been something that we've improved upon over the past 2 years.
That's wonderful. Now, do you have internal support for your Microsoft CRM, or do you use an outside third party?
We have our own IT department here that we stand up, and you know, the other area of business that we're in that we just touched on briefly, but is the services side. We have a full professional services group that can customize things like database integrations and the like. So we've got a very strong IT focus within our building just for solutions that we're delivering to our customers. Many mm-hmm. of our users are being driven not necessarily as much by security departments as they are by IT departments these days. So we can stand up a lot on our own, but then, you know, there are times when we have to go to outside sources to help us.
Sure. Well, one more question before we end here. What are you most excited about in the next 12 months?
You know, I just see that there's a lot of opportunity. As I mentioned, we do a lot in the federal government space, and it's a very good market for us, and there's some exciting things happening there with changes to standards and the like that will drive business. But what I'm mostly excited about is our opportunity in the commercial space. We've got a lot of new technology that we're looking to roll out the door. We've got had a very robust platform over the last 20-plus years in our product, and we're looking to carry that into some new platform technology that we'll be rolling out to the marketplace very shortly with new software. And, you know, I really see that moving towards services, you know, how we offer our systems to our customers going forward is really going to start moving more towards a services-based solution versus one that's got a lot of infrastructure behind it, both from a cost perspective and ease of use perspective. So I'm kind of excited about that from a technology front where things are being developed. And, you know, I'm seeing even more technology where, you know, when we talked about credentials when we started our conversation today, you know, things are even moving into smartphones as possibly your credential of choice versus a card. You know, there's some interesting things, exciting things going on in the technology space.
So you're going to have an app for that, huh?
Yeah, there'll be an app for that.
Excellent. Well, if somebody wanted to talk to you more about security or about what you're doing at Hirsch, how would they get in touch with you?
Steve.Healy, H-E-A-L-Y, at Hirsch-Identiv.com is always a good way to get a hold of me. You know, contacts are also on the web at Hirsch-Identiv.com. I'm available through, you know, email's probably best, but, you know, people can find me on LinkedIn and other places as well.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking time to be with us, Steve. I'm very impressed with what you're doing over there and what you've done in the last 18 months, and I'm looking forward to where Hirsch is going in the next 12 months.
Great. Thanks for having me. Well, appreciate it.
Take care. Another great company in Orange County. It's tremendous excitement. It's wonderful to see these companies that are strong, moving forward, have opportunities, and good management. Good management, clearly understanding the needs of the people, not only for the business. Business is certainly part of it, but also taking a personal interest in employees and how the company can help them become the best that they can possibly be. It's always astounding to me to see those companies that are take real interest in building the management, helping the management to understand it's not a matter of just getting the job done. It's not a matter of just making another sale. It's helping my people to be the best they can possibly be, and the rest will follow from that. So glad that you were with us today. If you're here today, if you're not and you're hearing this in the archive from either pilgrimonthe405.podbean.com or from octalkradio.net, glad that you were with us. We look forward to talking with you again next week on Pilgrim Talks with the Pilgrim on the 405.
You've been listening to the only show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal Pilgrim on the 405.